This is the ancient Lake Baikal, more specifically, the island of Olkhon, also known as the heart of Baikal. Straight away, you can feel something mystical here, a place of unique traditions, an amazing mix of cultures and peoples. But what makes this place so appealing? We're going to speak to some of the most prominent locals of Olkhon and uncover some of its secrets. On our way to see Yulia Mushinskaya. Her family has been on Olkhon for several generations, preserving the island's legacy, taking care of the local museum. Yulia, hello. Thanks for meeting us here. Such an interesting place. Tell me, have you lived here your entire life? And what gives you the motivation to stay here and preserve this culture and this heritage for everybody?
When I was young, my parents used to bring me here to visit my grandparents. I'd spend the whole summer here. One thing I can say about Olkhon Island is that I've never wanted to live anywhere else. When you come to Olkhon, especially in summer, you get the sense of freedom. And I don't just mean to move around. I'm talking about a state of mind. You're surrounded by endless blue sky, the sea, the mountains, and the vast steppes. It gives you an indescribable feeling of inner freedom. There's no way I'd trade being here for anything else. The Olkhon Museum is my life's work, and much more. It's my duty to carry on the legacy of my ancestors. It's life. It's not just my life, but my whole family's too.
There's such a wonderful energy to this place. You can feel it. But it's also bringing more traffic to Olkhon and to the island. Is this hurting the energy here, or does it help in some way? Is there a balance here?
There is no clear answer. Olkhon is millions of years old. It was here before, it's alive now, and it will live on. I wouldn't say that the energy of this place is negatively affected.
I'm really looking forward to seeing the museum. Can you show me the way?
Sure, this way.
So, Yulia, we're in the museum that your grandfather built, and there is a theory that the center of civilization is in Africa, but we're getting more information that another center is right here in Baikal. We know that Native Americans can trace some of their ancestry back here to Baikal. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
I'd like to tell you about a researcher from Irkutsk who spent his life studying Lake Baikal. His name was Stanislav Gorulov. He has since passed away. The idea he put forward was that at one time, before the Baikal Basin was formed, this area was inhabited by one of the oldest civilizations on the planet. Then, when the tectonic plates started to shift and the bottom of Lake Baikal began to sink, this entire population sank under the water with it. Borrowing from the name Atlantida, Gorulov called this civilization Baikalida. It's an uncontested fact that the people that inhabited Olkhon Island migrated eastwards. This was during ancient times, and the exact reason is still unknown. It could have been due to an advancing glacier. Maybe they were simply traveling, or perhaps they followed animal herds to retain a source of food. Whatever the reason, they went east. At that time, the Bering Strait did not exist, and the two continents were connected through a narrow landway, which scientists later called the Bering Land Bridge. Through this land bridge, people could cross to the other side and settle there. It is believed that these people were the original North American Indians. For several years, experts conducted archaeological research and excavations, and scientists carried out various lab tests. it was confirmed that the people who lived in the Baikal region and on Olkhon Island were the ancestors of the North American Indians.
So this really is a melting pot, a mixture of cultures, a mixture of religions. So how does it affect people on the island? Do people get along here?
We do have a mix of cultures here, and not just in the sense of everyday culture. We've had people of Orthodox faith, shamans, Buddhists, Catholics, and Muslims, a major Tatar diaspora. So yes, this place really is a melting pot. People would pass along parts of their culture and borrow other tribes' customs. These days, almost all of the Burats, and in general, the people living here, combine the practices of both shamanism and Orthodox Christianity. They go to church services, but they also observe the customs and traditions of shamanism. Members of any other faith that happen to be on the island respect these shamanistic rituals, and the practices are strictly observed. So that's the kind of cultural influence we've experienced.
If I look around the museum, I see many interesting artifacts and exhibits. I understand some of the artifacts that you have here are really rich in heritage and culture and historical. Can you show me some of the artifacts that you have?
Let me show you then.
So, Yulia, tell me about this. This is very interesting.
This is part of a Burat yurt, traditional housing. It usually has 8 walls, and every space serves a specific purpose. The fireplace was in the center, and it's where the family guardian spirit dwelled, the master of the fire and the yurt. When the family sat down to eat or had guests over, the first bite was always given to the fire. Only after that they would start eating. The Burats believed that fire purified everything, cleans the yurt from evil spirits that could harm residents. So this is the central part. There were also the east and west sides of the yurt. The east side was for women, because a woman has children, the giver of life, the beginning of a new life. And the sun rises in the east, and a new day begins. This symbolizes the beginning of something new. Men occupied the west-facing part of the yurt. The sun sets in the west, and the day is over. The end, death. Men were hunters and warriors. They brought death. And if there was a baby in the yurt, the cradle would be between the entrance and the fireplace. That's where they would hide it. The fire was supposed to protect the baby from all evil spirits. Shamanists used various elements to protect them. Angons. There is one hanging over there. They made them to be extremely scary looking. Shamans would make spirits dwell in such an angon so it would gain protective powers. That's why they had to look terrifying, so that evil spirits trying to get into the yurt would be scared and run away. Here is another symbol, Sergei. You can see these posts all around Olkhon. Sergei means a tethering post. It was used to tie horses up, as there are flat steps all around here. After riding for days, they needed rest, but they couldn't tie their horses to just anything. So Burats started installing these posts on the boundaries between their villages. Soon, these Sergei posts became sacred because they turned into meeting spots between families and tribes. They would spray them in a ritual as they believed they had sacred powers. The guarding spirit grew stronger, and people began to do rituals near them.
I love how everything has not just a purpose, but it also has a meaning to it as well. You mentioned about shamanism. It's not just a part of the culture or a religion. It's a really important part of, of everything here. Can you tell me more about shamanism in Buryatia culture?
Shamanism is not really a culture or religion. It's more like the worldview of the Buryatian people living here. In ancient times, people watched different processes, analyzed them, and made conclusions. If there was a storm, there won't be any fish. If there is thunder, it is going to rain. If there is drought, there won't be any harvest. They connected all these processes to territorial spirits. Shamanism is the belief that everything has a spiritual master, and you should be very careful with the spiritual world. You shouldn't damage nature. So it is more like a world view, and people have maintained it for generations.
Have you ever visited a shaman? Do you believe in shaman powers?
Well, I've never tried to. I do believe in that power, but it should be a last resort. I'm lucky to have never been in a situation where I might need it. When I'm ill, the doctor can diagnose or treat me. You have to understand that shamanism is not to be messed with. You have to be careful with it. Shamans communicate with evil spirits as well when they enter a trance, with the spirits of the underground. It's not right to think of them in terms of good and evil. Spirits can harm people sometimes, so you shouldn't go after the services of a shaman for sheer curiosity. You can talk to them, but ask for their help only when you have no other option. I never had to, thankfully. Olhon is the heart of shamanism in eastern Siberia because its energy is strong here, and you have to face the spiritual world whether you like it or not. Sometimes the spirits guide you, as people say. Anyone can go out into the woods, get lost, and simply travel in circles until they die. Nobody knows why this happens. A person can be living here his whole life and still get lost once he leaves his village. This has happened more than once. Another thing, you must always make an offering to the spirits at the highest mountain between the town of Khujir and the ferry. Olhon's spirits are powerful there. You have to make an offering even if you don't believe in spirits. When I was a child, my family lived in Angarsk. And one time, we came to the island by car with our friends. It was in the 70s when cars were slow and the roads bumpy. We stopped to have a snack near the Sergei posts. I was 7. My brother was 14. There was another boy with us, my mother, and the boy's father, who was driving. The boy and I saw coins scattered by the Sergei, so we ran to collect them. The man said, "Go on, we'll pay for the ferry with them." The ferry wasn't free back then. So we boarded the boat, 2 7-year-olds in the back seat. The ferries were small, they only fit 2 cars. Our car was at the back. The ramp was lifted by chains, and the ferry set sail. Halfway across the Olhonsky Varota Strait, the ferry's engine died, the ramp fell down, and our car started to roll back towards the water. All the men on the ferry tried to hold on to the car. The boy and I, the ones who collected the coins, were in the back seat. The ferry was narrow, and we couldn't open the car doors. As soon as we were out, the engine started again. The ramp was able to close, and the car stopped moving. Would you believe in spirits after that? My mother became a believer. Things like this happen here all the time. Shamanism is all around here. You face it, and you can't help but believe in it.
Yulia, it's been an incredibly interesting conversation. I certainly learned a lot. Thank you very much. Since shamanism is an integral part of the culture here, we too decided to receive our blessings. And we're going to see Valentin Hagdayev, the chief shaman here on Olhon. Valentin, hi. Hi. I just tied a green ribbon onto the pole here. I hope that's a good luck color. I hope that means something good for our team.
It's a good omen. Green is the color of the earth. The earth and the sky will help you. Blue being the sky and green the earth. It'll help you, hopefully all of us. Let there be peace and harmony for all. Come over here. These are Sergei, tethering posts for horses. All our gods, who descended from the sky, cats, came down here to save the world from evil. These spirits are all across the shores of Baikal, but these posts are here because the chief cat lives in this rock, according to legend.
So it seems to me that being a shaman, you have to be knowledgeable about medicine, you have to know about the spirits, but also, do you have to be a psychologist as well?
Of course. A shaman needs to know how to be a psychologist, an oracle, a healer, and a fortune teller. He must be all four things.
How often do people come to see you, and can you give me an example of what they come to see you for?
People come with all kinds of requests. Most often, they ask for spells to protect and rituals or rites to increase crop yield, for cattle breeding, hunting, or fishing. There are also birth and age-related rituals, from marriages to burial ceremonies, all the events that happen in our lives. But we only perform rituals if we're asked.
Is there anything that is taboo or anything that's forbidden, a ritual that you as a shaman will not or cannot do?
We'll never do a ritual to start war. We don't want wars. We won't agree to harm anyone or do evil to others. Evil, violent, or wicked things are taboo and something we'll refuse to do.
Can you treat anything with the help of a shaman?
Of course not. Today, modern medicine can do almost anything. We stay clear. Sometimes we use traditional healing practices when people come to us. Otherwise, we let professional doctors do their job. Medicine is there to treat people, and we look after the spiritual part.
And what about people relying too much on shamanism? Is it where you actually have to refer people to actually go see traditional Western medicine?
Such things happen, of course. If a shaman knows he can't really help someone, he'll send them to a doctor. If there's a broken bone, for example, and the patient needs a splint or a cast, they need to see a doctor. There's nothing a shaman can do in this case. I could hit my tambourine 1,000 times, and it wouldn't help. A shaman needs to be able to tell people when they can't help.
What is a common misconception about shamanism that you would like to clear up? Or what is something that you can tell people that they don't know about shamanism?
Most people's idea of a shaman is a person jumping around and beating a tambourine. It's a general misconception. You need to understand that a shaman is someone equipped with spiritual knowledge, someone who knows the legends and traditions of the people. He's the bearer of the people's spirit. In Russia, traditional shamanism is practiced among indigenous ethnic groups inhabiting Siberia, the North, and the Far East. But what some Russians, Italians, or French might have is just a hobby, or neo-shamanism, which is not the same. Traditional shamanism is a religion, a faith, practiced by indigenous ethnic groups, while neo-shamanism is like a punk subculture. Neo-shamanism and traditional shamanism are two entirely different things.
Told you that you needed to be a shaman? How did you know that shamanism was your calling?
It was tradition that initiated me into shamanhood. Then I started learning, studying the religion. I can't say I've always known I'd be a shaman. I didn't know. I lived like many other people, worked at a factory, served in the army, just like most people of my generation. And then I was chosen to become a shaman, and I took up my new duties.
What can you see about the future, or what can you tell us about, or even your hopes about humanity and what we can expect moving forward?
Humankind is standing at a threshold. There's a choice to make, either to slide back and become like reptiles, crocodiles, or move forward to spiritual heights and become better people. At each turn, at every rebirth, a person should become better, stronger, more beautiful, and closer to perfection. Each time we need to take one small step upwards and become a little bit better than before. Every person needs to work on themselves, improve, and re-educate themselves. It's very important. I thank you, dear Sean.
Here on Aljon, magic is everywhere, and it can be clearly expressed through art. And it can be seen through the eyes of artist Dashi Namdakov. Dashi, hi.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you for having us in your workshop to see where the magic is made. You yourself started as a local Bharatiya artist, and now you're world famous. And you've said that your success is based on your roots at home. Can you tell me about that?
I think it's because I'm still a Bharatiya artist. It's just the geography, in some regard, has become wider. This area around Baikal has given me everything: knowledge, culture, history. Baikal has a vast history. Archaeological findings indicate a great civilization was here a few centuries BC. It's a fascinating world.
Interesting. Now, you're an artist, but also everyone in your family is an artist as well. Talk to me a little bit about, is it genetic, do you think, or is it nurture, the surrounding culture has inspired you?
Well, I think it's both, but mostly I would say it's genetic. For generations, my ancestors were craftsmen. Back then, it was difficult to call it an art. In those times, just like in Renaissance Europe, artists were jacks of all trades, and so were our ancestors. They would create everything from daily items to church goods. In some way, that is an art. People back then had a lot of knowledge and a lot of craft.
Now, your sculpture on Cape Haboy is known as the Guardian of Baikal. We went out to visit it. It's a beautiful piece. But you call it the Father of Baikal. Is there a difference? Do you have a different meaning to this particular piece of artwork?
In Bharatiya language, I call it Baikal Bave, where Baikal is Baikal and Bave is Father. According to our ancient tradition, there are 13 deities around Baikal, and we worship the 13 keepers of the lake. I united them all in one face to emphasize this ancient culture. To me, it's a collective image related to the national culture and beliefs of the local population. The public knows it as the keeper of Baikal, but to me, it's Baikal Bave.
Now, we live in an age of multiculturalism, where sometimes local indigenous cultures can get lost and their identity can be lost forever. Do you see yourself as kind of a guardian of Bharatian culture, or maybe at least preserving your culture for future generations to come?
Well, I do this deliberately, mindfully. The knowledge I have from my ancestors, I pass it on using the instruments I possess. Being a sculptor, I cast my art in bronze, while a writer or a musician would, of course, be different. I use visual art to pass on this knowledge. I keep saying, though, that we are losing our culture, this knowledge, at an alarming pace. This is what worries me a lot.
Now, your work is exciting, it's energetic, it's fantastic.
Thank you.
There's also, it can actually be intimidating in some ways, but there's also definitely a magical quality to it. Do you think that there's a mystical side to being an artist as well?
I don't know about other artists and other cultures, but I think what I do is characteristic of my people and Siberian peoples in general. It has only been characterized as Buddhist art for the past few centuries. Before that, it was considered a pagan culture. Even today, Buddhism in this region is strongly mixed with pagan culture. I think this pagan aspect shows quite strongly in my art, because Siberia is mighty. Siberia is all about this raw power, and so is Baikal, with its winds and extreme temperatures. If it's cold here, it's freezing. When it's hot here, it's hot. And my art is much like nature. Whether I want it or not, it's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for taking the time to see us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.